me ask you this question. I was in a position for about 6 years when I led a lot of proposal development. I was with an SDB OSB that teamed a lot, as service disabled veteran owned small businesses do. I saw over time, Tim, a very considerable homogenization of method. Over time, we all shared method with each other so much.
Yeah.
The good news was there was a pretty consistent improvement of method across. I suppose from the government side, you would have seen a lot of method just get better because parties were on the contracting side were sharing it with each other and adapting and adopting. What I wondered, though, from the government side was, I think it became harder and harder for a bidder to distinguish an offer from other offers.
That's totally true. So we help the government evaluate proposals from time to time, right? So we coach them on like how to discriminate between proposals. That job has gotten really hard.
I bet it has.
More and more, it's extremely challenging to differentiate the technical proposal.
Yeah.
The past performance is, you know, whatever it is, right. And that's discriminating. And there are some company experiences that are discriminating, but not at the task level, right? Not at the...
Right.
At the what are you going to do?
Well, the work's getting done, right?
Exactly.
So yeah, I wondered if...
I'm a big fan of what FedSim has been doing for the last 25 years, which is they've been doing sort of job interviews for proposals. So you come in with your briefing, you come in with your key people, they get to talk to, ask, have a dialogue with the key people. And that's just like a job interview for a company for a task.
Right. I wondered if the situation I described was a contributing factor to government reaching for alternatives to, you send us the proposals, we read them all, we evaluate them, technical, price. If at some point they were looking at so many proposals and that were good and generally similar, they had to find ways that could permit offerers to distinguish themselves. And it might be more in the presentations. It might be more in the conversations.
So I think you're right. I think you're totally right. And I think that, you know, the job of the acquisition community and government is to find the right match.
Right.
Find the company that is best suited to deliver this. If it's a services contract, there is no better way to make that determination than to get with the people who will be delivering that service.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to think about enablers and constraints. What's helping people get on the same page? What's getting in the way of people getting on the same page? And in this case, let's define being on the same page as what you just said a moment ago, the match between an offer and the government need that looks, we have reason to believe, is promising as a means to the end of solving a problem. So what are enablers and constraints you're seeing today?
So the one that seems to be getting slightly harder to work with is a constraint, which is that the government people in this business have negative slack. And by negative slack, I mean they don't have a spare minute in their day.
Yeah.
They are working continuously and people may not believe this, but these are hard jobs and these things have to get done, and they have to get done on a schedule or the government can't perform. So there's no slack in the system, and there are not enough people or experts. And it's not so much because of the great retirement as it is because, frankly, when it comes to budgeting for positions and allocating resources to the function of contracting, it's hard to make the case. It shouldn't be.
Right.
A person who made the case very successfully recently is Shayna Webbers at IRS. And she was able to garner some additional positions for her function just to relieve some of the stress, you know, of the no slack environment. But organizations don't run well if they don't have at least a little bit of slack in them.
Right.
If nothing else, to absorb the blows, you know, when something changes.
Well, and I knew CEOs who I did some work at VA where there was an interest at that time in having a different conversation that was in the early stages of acquisition planning. And I facilitated meetings where a government contracting team sat in a room for a part of a day. Nobody thought it was a bad idea. But I know that while that CEO sat there, there were things she was getting behind on, right? If she needs to get back, it was men and women, but I could picture women who were CEOs, who were women in that room, who wanted to contribute to that conversation, because they knew if that conversation went well, that acquisition planning and process would go better down the road, right? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she's got stuff piling up on her desk, some of which, as you've said, have hard deadlines. The no slack condition had to prioritize things for them, Tim. They had to mm-hmm. address the things that were had deadlines that were near term. And if
you don't, you get behind and then you get further behind. And it's a sort of death spiral.
Yeah.
But I will say this, the best of them can create their own slack. And the way that they do that is by starting at the beginning as far upstream as they can, be proactive, get ahead, focus on the outcome that you want to get for the program, build the right team, get that team functionally participating together, and you can get stuff done in like record time. It, you know, what might take 2 years can get done in 5 months, and you're not behind, you're ahead of the curve, and you've delivered what the government needs.
Good point. Let me ask you this question. Let's talk about innovation a little bit. And I've got an opening question, but I know you've got some things you want to share on the topic. I was involved with you, with many others, for several years with ACT-IAC and the innovation activity they did. And I took a notion of innovation from industry that was a little bit different. It wasn't innovation. It was about technology. That's not what the thought was. It was doing something different to create new value for a customer. And then doing something different, part of the definition or part of the thought was within the business, within the organization. So the organization did something different. The idea, Tim, was a business was set up and running today to deliver today's value to today's customer, whatever that was. If it wanted to create new value, it had to do some things inside of its or operations that were different to innovate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's hard. It's not an easy thing to do. But when I thought about that in government, I thought the folks that really need to be thinking differently, innovating, are in the programs. But I saw all the pressure put on the CEO to innovate. And I thought, there's a bit of a mismatch here. The CEO or the contracting community could possibly do some process improvements and do some innovative things in terms of the contract actions. But the real innovations that the government needed to solve problems would have been with the programs. And I didn't see those program folks, and I might have missed it. I didn't see many of the program folks thinking that way with the CEO. Tell me if that was wrong, or maybe it's different today.
So I'd love to share with you an example from our experience, which has the property that very different thinking was brought to bear by the program people. In this case, the program was to support the victims of floods with a proper amount of insurance and diversify the risk away from the U.S. taxpayer and the Treasury to the private sector professionals who do risk management for a living.
Okay,
so that's very like, cool. how do we take this away from government, give it to some pros, buy the services of the
very cool
of the reinsurance industry and the marketplace that deals with that, and bring that stuff into government.
Very cool. Say a little bit about how the program was at FEMA. How'd the program folks get to that? We get to there.
So I'm not sure if they had any sort of outside advice, but at some point along the way, and we're supporting the folks at FEMA at that time in this program, the thought came up, the one way to diversify this risk is to go to the reinsurance market. We've never bought that as a government. The U.S. government has never bought reinsurance services.
Right.
How the heck would we do that?
Yes.
And so that we were involved at that point. It wasn't our idea to do that, but once the idea was on
you
the table,
them.
we helped to vet the idea and pave the way to the actual procurement of those services.
I've always thought, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the innovation work that ASI government is supporting, but I want to say this. I don't think that most American citizens think of government as innovative, and I think that's a mistake. I think that government is one of the most innovative, any government, federal, state, or local, one of the even special purpose jurisdiction, some of the most innovative entities around, because there was a time when every government program solved a tough public policy problem that had not been solved. Mm-hmm. That's the definition of innovation. You're going to do something different to create new value for a customer. In this case, mm-hmm. the customers are citizens and other U.S. entities. Government has always had to be highly innovative to do the job that government exists to do. What happens in government happens in industry. You set up a program. Your aim becomes to run the program efficiently. Mm-hmm. That's not the same thing as innovation. That is the same. That is what companies want to run. We all want to. You're the CEO, right?
Yeah.
You want to run ASI government efficiently. If you didn't, you could go out of business. It's so hard for any operation, any organization, to meet the efficiency objectives of daily operations at the same time continue to innovate to provide new value for existing but also future customers. It's tough to do, and I think government deserves more credit for the way it attempts to do that and succeeds at doing that. But look, the truth is, government, when it does its job well, is hidden. You don't even see what it's done. That's just the truth. Mm-hmm. You don't turn on the tap and worry about anything bad coming out of that generally, because government's doing its job. You don't get on an airplane and worry about a wing falling off. Governments and air commercial are doing their job. So I just always thought that government deserved more credit for innovation. I know that innovation and acquisition has been a big focus of governments for some time and of yours. What are some of the leading edge things you're working on these days to help with government acquisition innovation?
Process-wise, there's a difference between process and sort of directed energy, if you will, target-based. So process-wise, you know, what I've been working on has been with ACT-IAC, and it's been about really sharing the best innovations across government,
okay,
the things that people have done and found successful. And we've gathered up many dozens of these from both a business of acquisition as well as labor-saving technology, right? So one of the ways to get out of that no Slack environment is to create Slack by having technology substitute for knowledge work,
right?
So technology can do the administrative work without much issue and very fast, right? So we had experience of going from 2 years of human work to 3 days of computer work.
That's amazing.
My gosh.
Right.
It's amazing stuff. And it alleviates all of that mind-numbing activity of doing the same thing over and over. So that's one. That's sort of a broadly horizontal perspective.
Right.
As opposed to the issues of cyber and climate and, you know, the other things that are the priorities these days of the administration. I love the cyber challenge. And one of the things that I love about it is it's so hard. Okay. We do these things not because they're easy, but because they're hard. I think somebody said that one time.
Right.
About the Apollo program, right? We're going to the moon. And I love the cyber mission because it's really hard from an acquisition perspective. The cyber business is like an arms race where there are new weapons showing up every day.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to figure out not only how to buy the best that's available today, but how to create the technologies that you need for the future. Be part of that process, generally driven by venture capitalists, generally driven by private equity,
right,
like creating new stuff. That's a very different approach to a very challenging mission. And, you know, we've had the experience of having to deploy other transactions for cyber organizations, like the Army, for example, because they're very flexible and they can accommodate new and changing technologies as needed. So that's stuff I love as well.
Two questions. Tell me about the periodic table of acquisition innovations. Does that capture some of these methods?
It totally does. By design, and at in collaboration with the Office of Federal Procurement Policy and the Chief Acquisition Officers Council, designed that table to, if you think of the normal periodic table, mm-hmm. rows and columns mm-hmm. of elements, this one, the columns of activities are by the life cycle. And then there's a bunch of them that are within the federal acquisition regulations, sort of what is expected mm-hmm. to be done, mm-hmm. the activities ranging from acquisition strategy to market research to, you know, mm-hmm. RFP development, award, and then post-award administration. By the way, post-award administration is far more important than people get credit mm-hmm. for. We spend all of our time thinking about right. contract formation. Oh my gosh, like 80% plus is just in the administration of those contracts. And we're getting there with okay. the table, but it's not very full yet. To the left of the table are the non-FAR authorities that the government has. Things like OTs and challenges and mm-hmm. problem statements that aren't governed necessarily by the rules of the FAR. And so if people look at the table, and I would encourage people just to go look
sure.
at fai.gov / periodic dash table and see what's there. It's growing month to month, if not week to week.
And the idea being to, at the intersections of the columns and the rows, you were filling in things that a CO could do?
Actual examples of what people have done. So description of I'll call it description of a problem, but it's like context
right.
for an actual procurement. The documents that were used in the actual procurement. So you can download the documents that IRS used for its pilot IRS challenges. You can see what it looks like and how you could tailor it for your own purpose.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tool. Contracting officers who have a tough job, it's increasingly difficult with zero or negative slack, need a place to turn to get something quickly, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's that that's the kind of tool that they need to help them try something different. Otherwise, they only can do what they've done before, which they might even not want. They might not want to do. But if they're constrained, it's like, I just got to do what I got to do.
Yeah. So that's another version of on the same page. I'm just going to do what I've always done.
That's true.
This is a thing where, you know, if I'm having a question or an issue in a certain step of the contracting process,
it's nice to look.
If it's market research and I want to find out how to do it better, I can go to that place.
That's nice. And probably can find somebody to talk to, somewhere to go.
Yes.
That's nice.
Yep.
That's nice. The periodic table itself is the same page. You're kind of getting people on that same page with its construction. Our world's changing just so fast. Government missions, especially core government missions, I think become more important over time. Who's looking, not very far out, but who's got the eye on the horizon, and who's having the conversation today about what will the acquisition community do when the world changes so much that you have to ask yourselves, is the FAR outdated? Can we keep doing what we've been doing? Do we have to really radically change what we've been doing? I don't think we need to, but who's having the conversation, and what's it sound like looking out far enough to say, as technologies converge and we find things we live with things we can't even imagine today, how will government function from the acquisition standpoint?
So there's some of us affectionately call ourselves virtuous insurgents, right? And we think about these things. And I have some very smart colleagues who are dedicated to that kind of a mission.
That's interesting.
And those insurgents are less like scattered everywhere. Mm-hmm. They're just like individuals who care and they want to do something. But DARPA is a great example of thinking about a different world 10, 20 years from now. How do we prepare the government for that? What capabilities do we need? And these are the guys, I mean, they have learned how, by really putting preeminence on the program manager, create whole new industries through their acquisition business. It's amazing what they've done.
DARPA's history is fascinating.
It's just amazing. And so now you have the explosion of ARPAs, right? You've got ARPA-E, ARPA for Energy at DOE. you've got a proposed ARPA-H for health within HHS. I think it got eliminated from the bill, but there was the notion of an ARPA-C for climate, also potentially to live at DOE. So the ARPA meme is out there. Mm-hmm. And to some degree, that meme will propagate across the government as yeah. folks begin to consider the question that you just asked, how do we get ready for the future? That was the Defense Department's answer mm-hmm. to how do we get ready for the future. It worked really, really well.
Yeah, it did.
Unreasonably well. It should never have worked as well as it did.
Another great government innovation story.
Absolutely.
That's great to hear. I've been away from the acquisition community for a few years, and I didn't know of this sort of development, if that's what we can call it. It's great to hear because just like, well, look, Tim, this is not different than what you already have described, which was in the earlier time of the last 20 or 30 years. You had individuals who said, we have to do things better, and we shouldn't be afraid of the edges of the box. We got to get closer to the edge of the box in a smart way, and here's how we're going to do it. And those individuals, over time, as they led that, and you named some names of people who did, others watched. What you just described to me sounds parallel. If you've got some folks who are stand up in an ARPA, a loosely knit group, maybe it's chartered, maybe it's not, if they're thinking about those future questions, saying, we've got to be ready, they'll lead the thinking, and as they act, others will watch. And then there'll be some gravitation in their direction. Yep. Government's yep. a huge operation. You can't expect it to be very nimble, but you've got people like that who are staying out on that leading edge saying, we got to keep thinking about this because it's coming at us.
It's parallel in many ways to the replication of the pill meme, right? The procurement innovation lab was so successful, it turned into a meme. It turned into a thing yeah. that other people wanted to try.
Yeah.
And that's what happens both with DARPA and with DHS pill. And it's underway right now. What's so exciting is I'm getting to live through this. Yeah. This is generational. You know, yeah. that you can go back a long, long way yeah. and not see anything like this.
Yeah. Again, one of those things that the average citizen is never going to know, but if this is what's needed to have the government we want to deliver the democracy, the public policy that we expect. We've been talking for quite a while. We could probably talk for quite a while more. Is there something you wanted to talk about that we really haven't dug very deep into?
The raw dedication and talent of the people who are in the government, who are getting this done, and their colleagues across the aisle in industry mm-hmm. who are helping, who are partnering, who are collaborating, who are instigating, catalyzing, all for the benefit of the nation, all for the benefit mm-hmm. of, you know, countering those threats that we have from our adversaries, countering the threat of climate change, you know, countering and actually promoting on the positive side a whole bunch of things that relate to space, for example, and the use of space. And so I just, you know, I've got tremendous respect for these folks. They have really hard jobs on both yeah. sides of the aisle.
Yeah.
And they do a great job, and they do it for the country.
I like that. It is a hard job every day. These folks have a nuts and bolts job to get done that consumes their day. And the negative slack comes from not getting enough done that day. I mean, means you don't get enough done that day that you had to get done. And yet, I always saw in government the passion that you described, the commitment to a mission. And sometimes it's a particular organizational mission. Sometimes it's a broader mission in a sense we've talked about. If we could do this better, this being a big thing like acquisition. Could we do a particular acquisition better? Of course. But we're talking about acquisition like big A, capital A, can we do acquisitions better? What would that mean? What would that look like? And these folks talking to each other, working with each other, trying things at some personal risk, and not just that individual, like I say, it's a contracting specialist or a CO, they've got a chain of command they're working in. They've got a supervisor.
And a bunch of other people they're working with.
Yeah,
right?
And so there's real risks. And yet, I always saw that commitment that you mentioned, and I'm glad you mentioned it, because I think it really is what drives people to get the job done they've got to do that day, and to come back the next day to try to do it better.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a mistaken impression that it's administrative work. It's not. It's completely thought-driven, creative, problem-solving work.
Yeah, you're right. There's administrative aspects to it, but you're right. The job itself is really what you just described. Well, Tim, as always when we talk, I learn a lot from you, and you're also very inspiring. I enjoyed our conversation.
Well, thank you, Lou. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and to have this conversation. I enjoy it, and certainly would look forward to a future opportunity.
You're passionate about it. You know, what we could do, too, is bring someone into the conversation. We could bring a contracting executive into the conversation.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. We'd have to find somebody willing to get near the edge of the box.
We might know a few. Thank you, my friend. I enjoyed it and appreciate your time very much.
Thanks, Lou. Appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And that's how we see it, my friends. I want to thank Tim for recording both episodes with me. You can find them at iseewhatyoumean.castos.com, plus all the usual places. Send questions and suggestions through your app. Subscribe and give me a 5-star rating, unless you can't, in which case, let me know why. And join me next week when we take another look at how to get on the same page and stay there, unless we shouldn't.